10 straight days of dry weather. That's what Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has in his Indiana Farm forecast. And that forecast is coming up here on the Hat Podcast on this second day of October 2024. Good Wednesday morning. Podcast is made possible by First Farmers Bank and Trust. Experience banking built on heart, grit, and agriculture. Visit ffbt.com to learn more, or you can swing by your local branch and have a chat with one of the nice, friendly folks at First Farmers today about your ag operation. I told you yesterday in the news that you would hear more from some of the folks that made their way to Chisholm Farms near Kokomo, the foreign diplomats that were there last week. I speak with an Australian mate. Yeah, my Australian's not very good. His is, because it's, you know, authentic. You'll hear from him coming up in the news. Also, the port strike is on. We have more from Arlen Suderman on that, and Arlen Suderman weighs in on the markets as well today on the Hat Podcast. The news is next here on Hat.
At First Farmers Bank and Trust, agriculture has been a cornerstone of our business for more than 135 years. Our personal relationships within the ag community run deep for multiple generations. If you're looking for a financial partner that knows, understands, and supports agriculture, we want to hear from you. Let's grow success together. Visit us online at ffbt.com or visit any of our branches to meet an ag expert in your area. First Farmers Bank and Trust. Member FDIC. Equal opportunity lender.
We're more alike than we are different, and the port strike is on. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. This is Hoosier Ag Today. As I reported yesterday, over 20 foreign diplomats made their way to Chisholm Farms just outside of Kokomo, Indiana last week as part of their tour of Indiana. Matthew Worrell, Minister Counsel for Agriculture based at the Australian Embassy in Washington, D.C., spoke with me about the opportunity to tour the farm.
I'm from Australia, and obviously agriculture, farming is an important part of our economy. Most of our agriculture is owned and operated by family farms, which, you know, I understand the case here in the US. So it's always interesting, though, to get just a better feel for another country's ag sector and how that compares to some of the issues that are facing Australian farmers, which are a lot in common.
Worrell says there are more commonalities than differences between Australian and U.S. agriculture, and that's probably why we've had such a strong ag relationship over the years.
It's true to say that U.S. and Australia, we view farming as a commercial enterprise. It's a commercial business, and I think, you know, that's something that we have in common. You know, at a national government level, we work really well together because of that in some of the key global decision-making forums that sort of set the international trade standards that impact on agriculture.
While we don't typically think of Australia as one of our strongest trading partners, Worrell says the partnership is there and it's a valued one.
Obviously, our geographical separation, that poses a bit of challenge, but at the same time, the US is a major supplier of farming inputs, so, and also one of the major, if not the largest, investor in Australian ag land as well. So there's quite strong connections commercially there as well as at a government level.
In addition to touring the farm, the group of ag attachés also joined the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture meeting being held in Indianapolis and toured ag facilities at Purdue University. They also got to spend an evening with national FFA officers near the FFA headquarters in Indy.
Attention, Indiana farmers. Have you heard of the Indiana Agriculture Nutrient Alliance? We're a coalition of ag, conservation, and university partners dedicated to helping improve your profits and preserve nutrients through improved soil management. The Alliance has developed resources to share proven practices that will keep you at the forefront of better nutrient management. Go to inagnutrients.org to see why conserving soil is an idea older than dirt and something we can all dig.
Port workers walked off the job yesterday from Maine to Texas after the International Longshoremen's Association Union and the United States Maritime Alliance could not come to terms on a new agreement.
45,000 port workers walked off of the job demanding a 77% pay raise over the next 6 years, as well as a halt to the automation process, which would eliminate some jobs.
That's Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX. The strike has shut down ports from Texas to Maine, backing up the movement of consumer goods and containerized commodities.
Most corn and soybeans and wheat are the major commodities. These are shipped in bulk and are not impacted. This is primarily container shipments. There are some grain and oil seeds that are specialized, either identity preserved with certain traits or whatever, that will be impacted significantly. If you like your morning coffee, a lot of our coffee shipments come in through these ports.
Suderman says the bigger impact is to the larger U.S. economy. Even a short strike would be expected to have a big impact, costing it as much as $5 billion per day. Hear more from Suderman on this situation and the grain markets in the Hoosier Ag Today podcast, found now at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
Harvest means early mornings, late nights, and long days in the field. While you're out there each day until the last pass is made and the job is done, know that your friends at Farm Credit MidAmerica see your hard work and appreciate all of your long hours. We know that harvest is a busy season for you, but when you need a lender that can rise with you, give us a call at 800-444-FARM. This fall, we rise together. Subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions may apply. Farm Credit MidAmerica is an equal opportunity lender.
I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast. It's going to be a quick one here today because we are dry for the next 10 days. I don't have to talk about any precipitation potential between now and the end of next week. Honestly, I think the dry pattern goes through next weekend and into the early part of the week of the 14th, the way it's setting up across the countryside so far. Large upper level ridge kicking off here the rest of this week in the central plains and the nation's midsection, and that really kind of holds all the way through. We do see a few incursions of cool Canadian air coming down in the upper Midwest and the Great Lakes region. That may cause a little bit of vacillation in our temperatures up and down, but still nothing to impact harvest right now. It's looking at a beautiful period here with sunshine, blue sky all the way through. We have taken out moisture with a frontal boundary passage for overnight Sunday night into early Monday, at least in Indiana. There may be a few showers farther east in eastern parts of Ohio, but nothing that impacts harvest back this direction. So sunny, warm, and dry, even with the cool temperatures coming down out of Canada. I don't see us pushing to below normal levels at all. So that also means I am not worried about any frost or freeze conditions at all through at least the middle of October. We might see that up in northern parts of Michigan, but not down this way. So this is a very good forecast for harvest. I expect things to ramp up quickly, especially in central and northern parts of the state. Now, southern parts of Indiana, where the rains were a lot heavier this past weekend, it's going to take a few more days. But look, with the open, dry window that we have, even southern Indiana and the Ohio Valley in general is going to be able to see harvest ramp up relatively quickly. That's a look at your forecast update. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin.
The fields of green have turned to gold, and drivers are sharing the road with Indiana's farmers as they work to harvest their crops. That's why Hoosier Ag Today, the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, and Keystone Cooperative are reminding motorists to be patient with large, slow-moving farm equipment and vehicles. Do your part and make safety a priority. Take precautions. Be alert, slow, and focused. Let's all get home safely this harvest season. A message from Hoosier Ag Today, ISDA, and Keystone Cooperative. Wheat leads the grain complex higher. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. This is Hoosier Ag Today's Tuesday Farm Market Review. I'll have final numbers from Tuesday trade coming in just a moment, but first let's get market analysis now with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at Stone X. Arlen, we had a big USDA report on Monday. We've been talking a lot about weather here domestically and also in South America. What is it that had markets moving a little bit higher today for soybeans? Pretty good move for corn and a big move for wheat to the upside.
Yeah, we saw wheat trading a little bit higher overnight. It does have some fundamental support behind it. Corn got a boost yesterday from that tighter than expected stocks number in the stocks report, but it wasn't enough to really take the attention off the big harvest that we have coming in right now and the potential and the expected storage problems that we have in some areas of the Midwest that could push more bushels on to the market. So corn and soybeans were weaker overnight. But then as we opened trade and shortly after that, the White House confirmed that an missile attack of ballistic missiles was imminent toward Israel coming from Iran, a direct attack from Iran. And that seemed to really fire up the energy markets, as you can imagine. And when that happened, that strengthened the grain and oilseed moves as well. Wheat was still the leader, largely fundamentally because of tightening supplies in the Black Sea region. The drought that slashed their winter wheat crop is still in place. They're planting in the dust right now, and there's really not a lot of relief in sight for them over in the weeks to come, and that could threaten next year's crop. And the thinking is that Russia will end up restricting exports in the last half of the marketing year.
Arlen, as we look at the global picture here, again, we've got those issues over in the Middle East. We've got issues, as you mentioned there, with dryness over there. For this wheat crop. We've got dryness down in Brazil, Mato Grosso. How does that picture look from a weather standpoint? At one point, we were looking at maybe the middle of this month before they started seeing rain there. What does that forecast look like now?
Yeah, as we look at Brazil, and that's the biggest opportunity, shall we say, for a U.S. soybean crop to see a sustained rally is if they have a crop failure there. They're very dry. Their dry season created some record dryness in parts of center-west Brazil, the most productive part of Brazil. They've been waiting for the monsoon rains to return. They're late in returning, but that's been the case in 9 out of the last 10 years. Forecast models are now calling for those rains to return by the middle of the month, and really now that's pulled forward into the 6 to 10 day forecast, and expectations that by the end of 2 weeks that nearly all areas will have 1 to 3 inches of rainfall, and locally up to 4 inches of rainfall. And if that rain verifies, that will be in time in order to get the soybean crop planted. They'll very rapidly work at planting the crop. Obviously, they'll need follow-up rains with the ground being so dry, that typically happens with a developing La Nina. But if that happens, as I talked to our Brazil office this morning, they're confident they will get a big crop. It just puts at risk the winter corn crop, or you may hear it called the safrinha corn crop, which will be planted later. You can still grow a big corn crop when it's planted later, but it does increase the risk of a short corn crop.
And I assume that with that rain moving in there, and really things are starting to dry up now after we got rid of the remnants of Helene here throughout some of the Corn Belt, we're looking at a nice dry stretch for harvest here. We might start to see some harvest pressure. You know, again, today, soybeans a bit muted, not much here as you and I talk here toward the end of trade. We're starting to see things move a little bit lower in the soybean market. This could be a rough go of it here in the short term as we start to work through some of this.
Yeah, I really think so. I get asked frequently, okay, are the harvest lows behind us put in early this year? And it's really, I think, to a great extent going to depend on, A, obviously the size of the crop, which we should get greater confirmation of in the days ahead. But also with the rapid harvest now expected with mostly dry Midwest over the next 2 weeks, how many of those bushels are going to get forced onto the market because of storage problems, and that could create downside risk to both basis and the futures market. And I think that's the real risk here over the next few weeks, is being able to hold the recent lows as we force bushels onto the market. If we can hold those lows, then that would help support ideas of bouncing this market back. If we cannot, then they could continue to slip to lower levels.
With Arlen Suderman, chief commodities economist at StoneX. And Arlen, I want to ask what kind of impact this is having or might have on the market as well. Talks remain at a standstill right now with the International Longshoremen's Association Union. And really, right now, the strike is happening. We've got a huge number of union workers that have walked off the job now at ports running from Texas to Maine. And that's really just backing up the movement of consumer goods and containerized commodities all across that corridor. What is that going to do to the markets, what is it doing already to the markets, if anything?
Yeah, 45,000 port workers walked off of the job demanding a 77% pay raise over the next 6 years, as well as a halt to the automation process, which would eliminate some jobs. So that's what they're holding out for. It will have a significant impact on our economy, said to cost the economy up to $5 billion per day. The question is, how long will the strike go before it is settled? Most corn and soybeans and wheat are the major commodities, are shipped in bulk and are not impacted. This is primarily container shipments. There are some grain and oil seeds that are specialized, either identity preserved with certain traits or whatever, that will be impacted significantly. If you like your morning coffee, a lot of our coffee shipments come in through these ports and will be negatively impacted. Most of our meat exports go out through the West Coast, although we do have some pork and poultry exports that go down into the Caribbean area that will be impacted, but also some imports of meat that will negatively be impacted, which could actually support tightness of supplies and higher prices for some products here in the United States. So far, no significant impact on fertilizer, but overall, I think the big concern is the impact that it would have on our economy, that if it sends us into a recession, that could send us back into a commodity deflation mode from an investor standpoint.
And right now, President Biden has the ability to intervene in this. He's just saying he's not going to at this point.
Yeah, obviously, the Democratic ticket typically has the union vote, and they don't want to anger the union vote, so they'd rather not get involved. He's really in a tight spot, though, this time around, because we're also at risk of sending the economy into a tailspin ahead of the election, and that wouldn't be good either. I think a number of people are speculating eventually that will force him into declaring a 60-day cooling off period, which would get us past the elections before this strike would take up again. That's what we're watching for.
You and I haven't had the chance to speak since we saw the Fed lower the interest rates. Now that we have kind of seen the reaction to that here over the past couple of weeks, what are your thoughts on their decision to do that? Was it too soon? Are we okay at this point?
Yeah, I think the rate cut was widely expected, and with inflation cooling down, it was appropriate, although I don't think that we can declare mission accomplished it by this point either. My concern was that they are lowering by 50 basis points. I thought that sent the wrong message to the market and to the economy and could trigger reinflation. And since I'd stated that in my commentary, I've heard some other experts in the field, including current and former Fed members, who have indicated as such as well. So while after the meeting, we heard Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, at the press conference speak about more rate cuts to come and fairly aggressive. When he spoke yesterday, he spoke that maybe the markets have been over-enthusiastic about future rate cuts, and he seemed to indicate that while they haven't ruled out 50 basis point rate cuts in the future or larger if the data and dictates it, that overall to anticipate more like 25 basis point rate cuts. And so the market's trying to readjust its expectations on that. But the real key now, they indicate that they're focused on the jobs market, and we'll get plenty of jobs data coming out the rest of this week that could really indicate what the size of future cuts are.
Are there many people in the world that have to be as careful when they speak as that guy?
Every word is parsed, and it really goes back to when Ben Bernanke was chairman of the Federal Reserve back 15 years ago or more. And he believed this, seems to make sense, that transparency is good. So he really was on a campaign to make the Fed as transparent as possible. But in the process of doing that, I think has done more harm than good, because the markets are now so focused on every word spoken. And the markets tend to focus more on statements from the Fed than they do on actual fundamentals of the economy. And this is probably a case where a little less transparency would probably be healthier for the economy and for the markets in the long run.
Arlen Suderman there, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, StoneX.com. December corn up 4.25, 429. March corn up 5.25, 446.5. Up a quarter point on November and January beans, 10.57.25 on the November, 10.75.5 on the January. December wheat up 15, 599. October live cattle up 70 cents, 184.47. December up 37, 185.17. $1.25 higher on October lean hogs, 83.50. $74.60 on December lean hogs, up $1.32. That does it for the Tuesday Farm Market Review and the Wednesday Morning Podcast. We're back again tomorrow. We'll do it again then. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.